If getting pregnant has been a challenge for you, you are not alone. 10 to 15% of couples in the US are infertile. This can raise emotional, psychological, and physical issues that need individualized attention. So what could be the problem? How can you tell? Will having a child ever be possible? For answers, stand by. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Many options are available to help couples with infertility. We'll explore those with our experts today. The first so-called test tube baby was born almost 35 years ago. Doctors Steptoe and Edwards pioneered the technique that would become known as in vitro fertilization, or IVF. It was in the news again last week.
The groundbreaking scientist who helped pioneer IVF treatment has died at the age of 87. Sir Robert Edwards was awarded a Nobel Prize for his breakthrough work, which has seen 5 million babies born around the world.
July the 25th, 1978, and baby Louise Brown announces her arrival in the world. A groundbreaking moment that gave hope to millions of childless couples. Robert Edwards and Patrick Steptoe, pioneers in fertility treatment, had delivered the world's first test tube baby.
Hello, Louise.
Professor Sir Robert Edwards, seen here with a teenage Louise Brown, was awarded the Nobel Prize for Medicine. The enormity of what he played a part in achieving was never lost on him.
Well, wonderful. I mean, those moments don't come twice, do they, really? But remember, that was one of a succession of advances.
Today, Louise Brown said she was saddened to hear of his death. I have always regarded Robert Edwards as like a grandfather to me. His work, along with Patrick Steptoe, has brought happiness and joy to millions of people all over the world by enabling them to have children. 5 decades after his pioneering work, it's estimated some 5 million babies have been born through IVF treatment worldwide. A few thousand of those who owe their life to the treatment gathered to celebrate its 25th anniversary. Among them, Professor Sir Robert Edwards. He was a visionary whose legacy has been to change the lives of millions, who can now rejoice in the gift of their own child.
And what a legacy that was. Well, today we have Baltimore Magazine's top doctor in plastic surgery female urology category for 2011, Dr. Karen Boyle from Chesapeake Urology. Welcome, Dr. Boyle.
Thank you so much. It's great being here.
And then also, to keep me on my toes, I have Dr. Joseph Doyle, board-certified OBGYN with a fellowship in reproductive endocrinology and infertility, and he joins us from Shady Grove Fertility. Welcome, Dr. Doyle.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, Dr. Doyle, how long does it typically take for a couple to achieve a pregnancy?
So typically we tell a couple that pregnancy rates are going to, if you're in your 20s, they're going to be about 20% per month. If you're in your 30s, they're about 15% a month. So somewhere between that 15 and 20% per month range. And it's really you really just kind of stack up these odds of getting pregnant each month so that by the end of a year, if you had 100 couples all trying to get pregnant, about 85% of that group would have achieved a pregnancy.
Right. And what we can see there is a graph of the declining rate in green of the ability to conceive in as the age advances. But then tell us what the yellow line is showing.
Right. So on the green line there was showing your kind of percent of fertility relative to your peak, which is when you're in your early 20s. And that declines with age. And we know age is one of the most important predictors of your chances of getting pregnant. And it's particularly the female age that we find is the most important predictor. The other curve on that graph there was the rate of miscarriage. That also is going to be, it's kind of an obstacle as women age too. We know that fertility rates overall will be dropping, but at the same time, they're also working against that competing problem of miscarriage. So that also increases as you get into the, you know, late 30s and early 40s.
Right. So there's that balance. So there's a take-home message that
about age there that we're going to discuss a little bit more later. Now, Dr. Boyle, as a urologist, you're looking more at the male factor problems.
That's right.
But if we look globally, where do the problems lie? Is it more with women, more with men, or is it?
Well, it's pretty evenly distributed. Mm. We like to say that about 40 to 50% of infertility is explained solely by a male factor, and that an additional 20 to 30% is probably a combined issue between the male partner and the female partner. So it's a combination.
Mm. And so you, when you're seeing a couple for the first time, you're looking at all of those things and seeing where the issues lie. And often it is combined, isn't it?
Right. And often the man gets examined first because of the ease of getting a semen analysis. So often before we even see any of our patients, their primary care doctor, their primary urologist or OBGYN have ordered a semen analysis and started some of the initial testing.
Great. Dr. Doyle, I know you both work in the infertility field, but tell us the global sort of take-home baby rate for a couple who presents with infertility.
Right. So like I was alluding to earlier, the biggest impact on your take-home baby rate, and so these would be kind of numbers specific to people receiving treatment. So this would be couples who come to us after they've been trying to get pregnant already. So they're kind of in that infertile population. So it's very age dependent. So we when we break up the stats, when we talk to patients at Shady Grove, we give them numbers that are kind of distributed according to their age. So take home baby rate for a couple receiving treatment who are under 35, that's going to be your best prognosis group. And so generally, literally leaving the hospital with a baby is about 50% of couples with treatment. That's going to change slightly as age, and that's always nuanced by, you know, their specific infertility diagnosis. So even within these age brackets, there are ranges. So some people can have, you know, just a different spectrum. They may fall somewhere different in the spectrum. But once in the 35 to 37 year old age group, and this is specific to women, we generally quote a take-home baby rate around 40%. From 38 to 40, it's about 30%. And then once you're 40 years old or older, then it's about a 20% take-home baby rate.
Mm. Thank you. When we come back, we'll have some healthy soccer for you. Then we'll explore male infertility with Dr. Karen Boyle. Don't miss it. But before the break, take a look at today's episodes of Doctor's Orders. Go healthy. We'll be right back. Morning, honey. How did you sleep?
Oh, not very well. I need a caffeine fix.
Didn't those sleeping pills work?
Oh, not at all. I had this vivid dream that really scared me.
Scared you?
Yes, this voice kept shouting at me, "Someone's trying to kill you, someone's trying to kill you."
Who could be trying to kill you?
I don't know, but I don't have time to think about it right now.
Oh, really? Well, what time are you getting out to work? Oh,
hang on. Yes, is that my boss?
He's just here. Just a moment.
Tell him I'm not here.
Okay.
Yeah. 20 minutes. Yeah, I told you I'll be there in 20 minutes. Okay. All right. Man, I don't know who's trying to kill me, but this stress is just too much for me.
Why, what have you got on today?
Oh, I've got those 6 meetings this afternoon and 4 deadlines this morning. Oh, and by the way, I won't be home for dinner tonight because I've... Hey, where are my cigarettes and my lighter?
Well, what do you mean you're not going to be home? I was going to do steak and eggs for dinner and
don't
I had some nice cheesecake for dessert.
Don't worry.
What are you going to eat?
Oh, I'll go buy McFast food. I'll get a burger and fries and a Coke. And hey, while I'm there, maybe I'll try to figure out who's trying to kill me.
But you're so tense. I'm worried. I hate to think what your blood pressure is with all this stress.
Don't worry. I'll have my stiff drinks this afternoon. I'll take my antidepressants. And hey, you know what? Those things will probably calm me down enough. I'll be able to try to figure out who's trying to kill me.
Oh, I hope you're going to take some sleepers tonight to sleep.
I will.
Okay. Don't live like this or you'll die like this. Doctor's orders.
I know I'm looking for something, but what? Peace? Purpose? Meaning? I'm still not sure, but I know it's going to take faith.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good, and we're in the kitchen with Phil today. Phil, what are we going to cook today?
We're going to cook soca.
Soca?
Do you know what it is?
No.
Most people don't. Basically, it's a thin crepe that's made from the chickpea flour.
Oh, yum. I'm East Indian, so I love chickpea flour.
Definitely.
Oh,
and it's something great. That you can use for pizza. You can use it for all kinds of things. Put whatever topping you want onto it. It's very versatile, very delicious, and also very nutritious.
Yeah. It must be packed with amino acids, but yeah.
Definitely. Well, let me tell you what's in it. Mm. Basically, you're going to take 1 cup of chickpea flour, and that's going to be our basis. 1 cup of warm water, 1 teaspoon of sea salt, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, a few sprigs of fresh herbs,
yum.
And then 1/2 of a minced onion.
Oh, that sounds great.
Definitely, and it's a very easy recipe. Mm-hmm. So it's very basic. It will take a little bit of prep time.
Yep.
But basically, we're going to just combine all of our ingredients.
All right.
So we've got our chickpea flour.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to put that in there. We've got, actually, I'll do the dry ingredients first. We've got some salt. A little bit of cumin, which
is
optional, but I like lots of flavors.
Yeah, I like cumin.
We've got our herbs and our onions.
So what herbs might you want to put in?
You know, it's basically up to your taste, but included in this, I've got some rosemary, I've got some thyme, and some parsley.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to put our water in for you. And then we're going to also put in some olive oil. And you just want to whisk that up.
You don't want to do it?
I can do it.
Go on, you do it.
I feel like
you're the chef, you know.
I feel like it's not real unless you really kind of take it under your arm and just whisk it around.
Give it a good hug.
I've told you that I really like to get myself involved in food. And so when I make it, I like to get, you know, as close to it, possibly in the danger zone of getting dirty.
Yeah, yeah, right. That way you can smell it and feel it.
Now
it smells good.
It does smell. It smells very good. Mm. And the trick with this is you need to set it aside. So this basically needs to set aside for a couple of hours.
Mm.
And that's so that the dry flour can absorb the water and basically kind of work together.
All right. I'll take your word for it.
Now, so that we don't have to wait the 2 hours, we've prepared some before.
Okay.
So basically, this is what it looks like when it's all done.
Mm.
And we're going to spray our pan.
Spray. Okay.
And then we're basically just going to pour it in here. We're going to make our crepe, and we'll just let that kind of flow out there, just like a thin crepe, just like any other that you would make. Now, this would be broiled for about 3 to 4 minutes. And I want to say that you got to be careful with ovens, just because you never know. You know, they're all a little bit different, so keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
But what you do is you broil that, and then we've got our finished product right over here.
Oh, let's move right across then.
And the great thing is that we prepared some hummus, we prepared some zucchini. You can use potatoes, you can, if you've got kids or something like that, turn it into a pizza. You can use this for just about anything.
Wow.
So take a piece.
Take a piece. It looks too beautiful to sort of mess up. I think I'll go for some hummus. What do you want?
I'm going to go for the zucchini.
Oh. Okay, here we go. That would make an outstanding pizza.
And I love the crispy texture.
Mmm.
And the flavor of the herbs.
Mmm. And because it's got chickpeas in, it's going to be quite high in protein. That is a great way to get some lovely food into your kids. It's beautiful. You definitely want to try this recipe. Now let's watch this video.
The menstrual cycle of fertile women usually lasts about a month. During this time, and under the influence of the body's own natural hormones, a tiny sac within the ovary containing an egg grows to about the size of a grape. At a point midway in the cycle, this egg is released from the ovary and ovulation occurs. Ovulation is also regulated by hormones. The egg, which from this moment on is ready for fertilization, then passes into the uterine tubes to await the arrival of fertile sperm. Ovulation is a naturally occurring event, and the desire to have children is a similarly natural instinct. But that instinct cannot always be fulfilled. The causes of unwanted childlessness are numerous, but so are the means of treating them. A further development of IVF is the technique of intracytoplasmic sperm injection, or ICSI for short. This is a method which has revolutionized the treatment of male infertility in recent years and gives men with poor quality sperm the chance of fathering their own children. In natural conception, many millions of sperm cells in each ejaculation are necessary for fertilization. In ICSI, just one may be enough. Women having ICSI are given special reproductive hormones to encourage several eggs to develop in the ovaries. The eggs are then removed from the ovary in a short outpatient procedure. Fertilization in ICSI is achieved by injecting an individual sperm cell into each of the collected eggs. For this purpose, each egg is placed under a very powerful microscope and a single sperm cell is injected directly into it by means of a very fine needle. Following injection, and after about 24 hours in the incubator, most of the eggs will show signs of fertilization, and the cells divide and multiply to form an embryo. After 2 or 3 days, a healthy embryo will comprise around 8 cells. It is then transferred to the uterus by means of a thin, flexible needle, where it is left to implant and form a pregnancy. All these methods of assisted reproduction offer couples a good chance of bringing a healthy baby into the world. A consultation and thorough examination are necessary for each individual patient for finding the most appropriate treatment with the highest chance of success. Because female fertility decreases quite quickly after the age of 35, infertile couples should not delay seeking appropriate medical advice.
That's just another reminder of that age factor, isn't it?
It is. It is. 35 is the magic number for women.
Yes, it is. Now, you are a urologist, so
yes.
You look after the men.
Yes.
That's going to really confuse me today, but here we go. How important is it for both sides of the couple to attend the clinic together?
I can't impress upon people how important it is to look at both members of that partnership. You know, obviously, we concentrate so much on the female factor. We all expect infertility to be due to female factor. But almost 50% of the time, it's the male alone. An additional 20 to 30% of the time, it's a combination of male and female issues. So getting a semen analysis is an easy thing to do. It's often done first when we suspect infertility. And then having a very dedicated male infertility workup is very important for that male partner.
So really, it's important for them to see a urologist if
yes.
there is an issue going on. What things might you be looking for?
Well, I think any man that has abnormalities of his semen analysis. So when they get the semen analysis, if there's no sperm, obviously that's going to prompt an appointment with someone like me or a urologist specializing in infertility. Or if the count is low, low sperm count. Those things are important. And so what we're looking for in our evaluation is something wrong physically, so on physical exam, or something wrong hormonally, and then also looking at the semen parameters closely to see what's going on. So some of the most common things that we see in our evaluation are issues with hormone production and then abnormalities in the scrotum, such as varicocele, where there's an enlargement of varicose veins. Those are common things. But we also want to rule out much more serious problems like cancer, testicular cancer, prostate cancer, not that they would necessarily be causing the infertility, but we do diagnose those very frequently, you know, in men that we see for infertility consultation. So it's important to be seen.
Mm. Now, let's run through for the hormonal issues.
Yes.
Anything can be done?
There are things that we can be done. I think the one thing to impress upon people is that we don't want to treat a low testosterone level with testosterone therapy. So when we give a man testosterone, so that's something that we see commonly, is a low testosterone, low sperm count. But when you give a man testosterone therapy, that actually drives his sperm production down significantly and often to zero. So that is not something that we would do, but there are other therapies that we use similar to female factor to sort of push the testicle and try to help improve sperm production, but they're empiric. So they're not going to hurt. They might help. But the biggest thing for us is ruling out other factors, things that we can correct, such as blockages, varicoceles, those kinds of things.
So tell us about that. Surgical procedures or?
Yes. So in a man that may have a blockage, so the most common blockage is something that he will know about is a vasectomy. So when we see those patients that have a vasectomy, then we know that one, we could either reverse the vasectomy microsurgically with a very high success rate of over 90%, or we could retrieve sperm surgically from that man and do in vitro fertilization with him. Or unknown blockages from chronic infection, inflammation, abnormalities of the ejaculatory ducts, so things that would propel the ejaculate out. So there are things there that we can diagnose and treat. Other serious medical problems such as diabetes we encounter. So men that may not be ejaculating normally because of an underlying medical problem like diabetes. And then things on exam like varicocele. So a varicocele are varicose veins in the scrotum, just like we get in our legs. It's from incompetent or bad valves in those veins. And they heat up the testicles and drive sperm production and motility down.
Most men don't realize that heat is such so detrimental to sperm.
No, and we can talk about when we talk about lifestyle factors. But, you know, heat is bad, meaning stay out of the sauna or hot tub. The whole boxers versus, you know, brief thing, that isn't that important.
No.
But because varicocele, you know, we know that thermal injury to the testicle, although it usually is reversible, is something we want to avoid. But varicocele is something we can fix with very high success rate and help improve sperm production.
Now, when a couple encounters infertility, there's a real psychological impact for them.
There is.
Tell us about
that. Yeah, I mean, obviously, again, we think about things in terms of the woman and we go to that. But since male factor is so common, much more common than I think most people and even physicians realize, that real emotional component of how it affects the man in terms of his sense of masculinity and virility needs to be addressed. It's very emotional for him. Not discounting how emotional it is for a woman, but a lot is tied up in that for him. And, you know, his sense of being able to provide, you know, procreate, you know, be a man for his relationship. And it can affect the relationship significantly, not only in terms of intimacy and intercourse, but, you know, their marital happiness as well. So, you know, I think Dr. Doyle and I both, even though we're taking care of medical problems, there's so much counseling involved in an infertility evaluation and treatment. We get so close to our patients because we delve into those issues and make sure that we talk about the whole couple and not just the medical problem.
Right. And so this is a side of infertility clinics that I think people who've never been to them don't understand. Right. That it is really holistic care, isn't it?
It is. You know, not that we're necessarily licensed to do marriage counseling and therapy. I mean, we do refer to that when necessary. But there's a lot of hand-holding. There has to be a lot of hand-holding. It's such an emotional process for couples going through the evaluation, going through surgery, going through in vitro fertilization, that you really, you treat them like your family. I mean, you really bring them into your heart and sort of carry them through the process. And it's a lot. But the great thing is that there's so much we can do good for couples to help them have children. And so at the end, the reward is obviously worth the process.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. We're going to take a look at today's medical news report. And after the break, Dr. Doyle will be back to discuss female infertility. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment. Headlines today, chemo prevention in the diet, testosterone blocking agents, thin bones, and lifestyle factors in cancer survivorship. Migration to a Western country carries an increased risk of prostate cancer for Asian men. This suggests that diet, environment, and epigenetics probably play a role. Soy products and curcumin are staples of the Asian diet. And they are potential chemo preventers of prostate cancer because of their ability to alter several intracellular signaling pathways. Recent evidence shows DNA damage response is one of the earliest steps in the progression to invasive cancer. Both the soybean and curcumin activate the DNA damage response. So men, be sure to eat your soy and add some turmeric to your diet. Osteoporosis is a common side effect of androgen deprivation therapy in men with prostate cancer. While it may prolong life, it does result in a loss of bone density. A systematic review of current literature revealed the importance of an adequate intake of calcium and vitamin D through a combination of supplements and food to reduce the risk of osteoporosis during treatment. You might consider eating tofu or green leafy veggies and vitamin D fortified foods every day, or take supplements while using hormone blocking agents for prostate disease. Lifestyle factors have been linked to the risk of developing many cancers and to their long-term prognosis. Factors such as diet, smoking, alcohol, physical activity, and body weight are linked to the risk of cancer recurrence and mortality in cancers of the breast, the prostate, colon, and other cancers. Cancer survivors who make these lifestyle changes feel better, experience less fatigue, and may even decrease the risk of cancer recurrence. So make a change and get the most out of your life. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's medical news report.
Have you ever heard people say that Jesus is the great I am? But what does he have to do with these two words, and how does it affect my life? Jesus once said, before Abraham was, I am, and the crowd immediately picked up stones to kill him. So there is something special and dangerous in those two words. But what is it? Join us live on Cross Connection to find out this Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. How do you know whether you're fertile or not? Well, we went shopping to see what's being offered in the way of fertility testing on the stores, on the shelves of our drugstore. Dr. Doyle, we have here a thermometer. That was one of the things on offer. How might we use this? It's pretty simple, isn't it?
Right. That is one of the easiest ways that you can track ovulation during your cycle. And as we have a great picture here of just how, you know, this would be tracking through a woman's cycle. And typically women who are doing, it's called a basal body temperature measurement, and you're checking that every morning. So they would wake up first thing before they, you know, run out of the bed and hit the shower and everything else. You'd check your temperature, and you record it during the first part of the, record it every morning during the month.
And day one is the first day of the menstrual.
Exactly.
Of menses, right?
Right. Yep. So you start there with when the first day of their menses, and you can, what you can see here is you go through about the first half of the month. In a typical 28 to 30 day cycle, most women ovulate right around day 14, and that's really well demonstrated here. And what happens once you ovulate is that a new hormone is introduced into the body. That's progesterone. That's when it kind of makes its appearance on the scene. And it's the properties of progesterone that actually cause a rise in a woman's basal body temperature. And so you can see it very, you know, very distinctly right here. Now, one tricky thing about these basal body temperature charts is it doesn't help you. You know about ovulation after the fact. So it's already come and gone. So if you track this over months, it can tell you, okay, I usually roughly ovulate around day 14. So then you want to focus on that period before that.
Right. But an egg will survive for?
Only about 12 to 24 hours.
And sperm? Well, sperm are a little bit tougher, so they can last for 2 to 3 days.
All right. So you've got a tiny window there.
Right.
Even if you did wait till the temperature rose. All right. Now, what have you got here?
So
this one we found was called Sperm Check Fertility.
Yes. So Sperm Check Fertility is basically a good preliminary screen to see if you have either normal numbers of sperm or absent sperm from the ejaculate. It doesn't give you a semen analysis reading, so it's not going to give you a count and a motility, but it's going to say, okay, if you have these two lines appear, then you probably have a count over 20 million, which is our cutoff for concentration.
But normal.
Right,
yeah.
But it doesn't replace a semen analysis. So we would still recommend, even though this is good to do at home and maybe reassuring if you're just curious, that after, you know, 6 months to 12, depending upon your female partner's age, we would still recommend a semen analysis. So this shouldn't replace that, but it's a good screen.
Right. And I think we have a graphic of a sperm. And when you do a semen analysis right there in your laboratory, you're looking at different
aspects. The components of the semen analysis, the first one is volume. So how much does a man ejaculate? And then how many sperm come out in the ejaculate based on a concentration. So, you know, they're not looking through the whole ejaculate. They take a little sample of it. And so it's calculated in millions per cc. Mm-hmm. And normal is over 20 for most labs. And then they look at how well they're moving, the motility. And normal for most labs is over 40 to 50, depending. Most of our labs are over 50. And then they look at the breakdown of the sperm, sort of the head of the sperm, the acrosome, body part, and the tail. And they give it a grade of how good it looks, which can be the morphology. Mm. And interestingly enough, morphology actually isn't expected to be very high. I mean, a normal morphology is 15% or better. So you don't have to have that many perfect sperm to get pregnant. But those are the big components of a semen analysis that we do.
Right. Thank you for that, which this test wouldn't do. It gives you a basic
count. This one is basically saying, do you have sperm in what looks like normal numbers, or are we worried you don't? That's all this is going to tell you.
Right. Now, what have we got here?
Okay. Joseph,
we've got this box is called an ovulation predictor. So what's it going to do for us?
Right. So the ovulation predictor, it's a nice complement to this basal body temperature chart. But we were talking about the limitation of the basal body temperature measurements are the fact that by the time you see this temperature rise, the progesterone is present. That means you've already ovulated. So really, when we think about the peak fertility window, it's the 6 days that end with ovulation. So it's the 6 days prior to this when your peak fertility is during a cycle. So how you can use these ovulation predictor little strips here is that you can actually you can monitor the hormone that comes from the brain that tells you to ovulate. And so each morning, or whenever you like to do it, just once a day, generally we have people do it, is they would just collect urine, dip the stick in there, and then they can detect that hormone from your brain, that hormone called LH. And so oftentimes, if it doesn't say ovulation predictor kit, it may say LH predictor kit. And so you're just picking up that LH surge in the body that triggers ovulation. So it's the 6 days prior to ovulation that's your peak fertility window, but really it's once you have that surge, that's probably your peak. If you had 1 or 2 days that you got to pick a whole month, pick those 1 or 2 days once that strip turns positive.
Right.
And you want to have intercourse every other day around ovulation. One of the other things is more is better, or waiting and storing up our sperm is good, but that's not true. So every other day is optimal so that men have the opportunity to sort of replenish their reserve.
Mm-hmm. Great. And then we've got this called a fertility test. What's that about?
So there's, you know, a lot of these tests are coming out on the market. Easy way is to get a sense of where you kind of fall out in the hole in the group. Now, the one thing that we are cautious about these sort of tests are, so this is an FSH test. So one part about FSH, that's a hormone that your brain produces to stimulate the ovaries each month. So in kind of an easy way to think about it, if your brain really has to send a strong signal to the ovary, that strong FSH signal, then there's not so many eggs left in the ovary, so it'll be higher, your FSH will be high. Now, generally the trend is that it's high, but during the course of a day, it's going to fluctuate a lot. So, just because you catch one FSH that's normal, it doesn't mean that the rest of the day you don't have periods where you're very, very high. So that's why we kind of are a little bit cautious about these. We have a lot of different tests now that we do when we evaluate the ovaries when we see patients for the first time, because you can sort of get misled. Even people who are 45, 46 years old, whose chances of pregnancy are exceptionally small, can have a perfectly normal FSH, and that shouldn't make them feel, I should be fine for pregnancy.
Right. And be falsely reassured.
Right. We don't want them, you know, like we were talking about early, age is the most important thing. Use that on your side.
Well, thank you. I hope you know which product or not is right for you. And before I answer your questions, let's learn about another ageless advantage.
Do you have high blood pressure? A little careful menu planning can help. A 2007 health professional study found that hypertension was almost 25% less likely among people eating at least 4 servings daily of whole grain foods. If you plan oatmeal for breakfast, a whole wheat sandwich for lunch, brown rice with dinner, and snack on popcorn, you've easily enjoyed your 4 servings. Adding whole grains to your menu plan is another ageless advantage.
Welcome back. Now it's time to answer the questions you've texted me, called, or posted on our Facebook page. Now, June posted on Facebook, I watch your program from Portugal and really enjoy all the tips and advice given, especially because it's in English. Keep up the good program. Well, obrigada, June. Thank you. Another one posted, I have been trying to conceive for a while. I started having irregular periods in 2009, then no periods at all. In 2010, I was prescribed Provera tablets. I took them for 3 months, and during those months, I had my periods after finishing the tablets. But then they stopped. I went to see the doctor who sent me to a gynecologist. She put me on Trigestrel. How does a family planning tablet help me conceive? That is a very good question. You know, the problem you have is quite complex. For some reason, you're not ovulating, and we're about to discuss this with Dr. Doyle, but you're not ovulating, so you're not menstruating, and your periods are far apart. The concern that your doctors have is that there can be overgrowth of the lining of the uterus because it's not being shed regularly. Sustained, prolonged overgrowth can be precancerous. So it's important to prevent it. So they're making the periods come with either the Provera or the family planning pills. Of course, that doesn't help you with your problem of infertility. So my advice to you is to ask for a referral to an infertility clinic. In the meantime, while you're waiting for that referral and assessment and treatment, be sure to achieve a normal weight, not too thin, not too heavy. Get into an exercise program, eat a plant-based whole food diet so that your own hormone levels can be optimized, and pray for a baby. Brenda from Harvey asked, please explain erosion of the stomach accompanied by gastric acid reflux. Well, Brenda, when acid from the stomach refluxes up into the esophagus, it erodes the delicate mucosa at the lower end of the esophagus. Sometimes it can come all the way up. That's painful. So what can you do? Try not to eat a large meal in the evening before lying down. Instead, have it at lunchtime with a light supper. Avoid drinking with meals because that drink will increase the volume of your stomach. So drink your fluid water between meals. Don't eat between meals. Allow your stomach to empty properly. Well, someone else asked, what do I do in regards to gas pain? I have lots of gas after I eat. I have no appetite. What should I do? You may have a food intolerance, an infection, an allergy, or something else going on. See your doctor for a full assessment. Thanks for sending those questions. Call us now if you have a question on fertility. My experts are standing by right here. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. Remember, you can also text us or post the questions on our Facebook page. In a moment, we'll continue our discussion on infertility, but first let's take a look at this Bon Appetit. Broccoli is really a mass of flower heads on a woody stalk. It's in the cabbage family and it's been cultivated since Babylonian times. Perhaps King Nebuchadnezzar ordered broccoli to be served to the vegetarian Hebrews in his court. Of all the brassicas, broccoli has the highest level of carotene compounds. It's especially rich in lutein. That's good for your eyes. It's also high in vitamin K and vitamin C. And it contains multiple nutrients with potent anti-cancer properties. A high intake of broccoli was found to reduce the risk of aggressive prostate cancers. But remember, broiling reduces the levels of anti-carcinogenic compounds, so 50% is lost after just 10 minutes in the pot. So instead, you might want to try steaming or stir-frying to preserve those powerful chemicals. Bon Appetit. Dr. Doyle, your focus as an OBGYN is on female infertility and the endocrinology side of it. Right. Tell us, what are some of the causes for female infertility?
Okay. When we first see a couple, I think the easiest way you can kind of break it down is just by looking at three main areas. Dr. Boyle covers the male factor side of things, so that's one big spoke in the wheel. And then we also talk with a couple, the two major areas you need to evaluate are the ovaries. And we use the term ovarian reserve. That's just a word that's supposed to capture how many eggs and what's the quality of those eggs that remain in the ovaries at that point. So that's one branch of it. And then the other branch is structural things within the female reproductive system. So there's the uterus, the fallopian tubes, and structural things around that. So, for instance, people with things you could consider inside the uterus would be like fibroids or polyps. Those things can distort the uterine anatomy. The fallopian tubes are the structures that come off either side of the uterus, and that's what allows the transport of the eggs towards the uterus or the sperm out there to meet the eggs and form that embryo.
So multiple things can influence that anatomy too. For instance, diseases like endometriosis or women who have an infection in the pelvis for other reasons, that can create scar tissue that can distort the anatomy. So in a really simplistic term, when I first meet couples, we talk about the male factor side of things, and that's where Dr. Boyle helps us very closely. And then the other two main places, ovulatory function with the ovaries, and then structural things with the uterus and the tubes.
So how could you tell? What sort of tests would you do to check the tubal patency?
Yeah. So in order to check the tubal patency, and as we were talking about earlier, that's important to just make sure that the embryos that form out there in the fallopian tubes can actually make it back into the uterus and implant. If there are blockages in there, it's going to arrest that return to where it's supposed to be. So a test that we do in order to check that is called a hysterosalpingogram, or an HSG. So a hysterosalpingogram, this is a perfect picture of one. A small catheter goes through the cervix, and it puts a contrast into the uterus that just travels backwards through the fallopian tubes and should spill out into the abdominal cavity. Now, people who have a block in their fallopian tubes, for instance, you'll see that line, but then it'll abruptly stop. People can also have a dilated fallopian tube where it's real big, but it never quite spills like it should. So those are the sort of things that we're looking for with an HSG, and that's how you can check how the tubes are working.
Mm. Now, you mentioned about ovulation. Tell us about problems. You know, I just answered a question for one of our viewers who asked about not having regular periods. And so tell us about the anovulation problem.
Yeah. So anovulation is becoming one of the most common problems that we encounter anymore. Mm-hmm. Very closely linked to the obesity trend in the States, too. The anovulation refers to when you're just not releasing that egg on a monthly basis. And how women experience that themselves is they don't have a regular 30-day cycle where, you know, on the 15th of every month they have their period. These are women who the cycle can be 30 days and then 45 days and then 15 days and 60 days. So they don't have a regular pattern. So in ovulation, the problem for those couples is that they don't really know when to be focusing their attention on trying to conceive and have a baby. So if it's difficult to predict, one way you can get a sense of it is with those LH predictor kits we were speaking about earlier, because that can help you. The challenge is you just don't know. If you go 60 days, 90 days, and don't have a period, you don't really know when in there that it's going to finally turn positive. And so you don't know when to time things, and then that gives you far fewer chances. You know, within a year, if you have 12 periods, you have 12 shots at pregnancy. If you only have four periods in a year, then you only get four shots at a pregnancy. Mm. So that can be a huge challenge to women struggling with that.
Right. Now, you mentioned also endometriosis. Tell us a little bit about endometriosis, how you might diagnose it.
So endometriosis is quite a quagmire. So from a medical point of view, that just refers to the tissue inside the uterus somehow gets into the abdominal cavity, whether that travels through the tubes or that's being kind of ironed out, exactly the etiology of it. But it's when the tissue inside the uterus is outside of the uterus and other places in the abdomen. The problems can manifest as women with endometriosis can have pain because you can imagine discomfort with a regular period. You have that same discomfort, except this is endometrial tissue that's adjacent to your bowel or nerves in the abdominal cavity. So it can cause pain. It can cause infertility by just distorting your anatomy. It can, it leads to adhesion and scar tissue because it's an inflammatory process. So that can kind of, locate the tube and the ovary. Instead of being right there next to each other, they can kind of pull them apart. Or it can even block the tubes if there's severe disease, or it can even grow on ovaries. And then some people will even have no symptoms. I mean, it's really a tricky disease when it comes to diagnosing endometriosis.
And how can you really, what's the gold standard for diagnosing it?
Yeah, unfortunately, surgery is the way that you can diagnose it. We don't have a blood test for endometriosis at this point. But there used to be a big trend towards doing a lot of surgery to look for endometriosis, particularly in unexplained infertility, which I know we're going to speak a bit about. There's been a big shift away from that, though, because the prevalence of endometriosis is still, while it is a problem there, you would have to roughly do 50 laparoscopic, take a look in 50 women's abdomens to look for endometriosis to get one additional pregnancy when you're talking mild disease.
In terms of infertility, but if you're looking for the reason for their pain, then that's a different story. Here we're just looking at infertility. Well, that's very enlightening. We still have lots to cover, and both of our experts are going to be ready to take your questions. So don't go away. Go Healthy for Good. We'll be back after a short break. Doyle, you just mentioned about unexplained infertility. Tell us, is that a bit of a catch-all, or what's going on there, and how do we treat that?
So unexplained infertility is where we look at both members of the couple, and you know, generally that three-pronged treatment. We look at those semen analysis, we look at the HSG, the structure of the uterus and the fallopian tubes, and we look at the ovarian reserve testing, and we don't see any specific abnormality. So that would be a couple with unexplained infertility. There potentially is something going on, but based on the evaluation that we do now, we haven't been able to identify it. So for couples with unexplained infertility, the first step generally is a very low-tech approach. It's not very complicated, and all you're trying to do is optimize their chances of pregnancy each month. So generally, they do have a reduced chance of pregnancy, but you want to try and push them back up to that normal rate as close as we can get. And then you want them to take you know, like I said, it's just a matter of taking swings at the plate each month to try to achieve that pregnancy. So if you have unexplained infertility, you can start with medications as simple as pills, and you can combine that with a treatment called IUI, intrauterine insemination. And that is a very straightforward treatment approach and gives the couples a nice bump back up to what their expected conception rates would be.
And that's not particularly costly, is it?
Right. And, you know, I think that's a really important thing to reinforce with couples is I think they oftentimes think, you know, I'm not seeing an infertility doctor, I'm going to IVF. And we really want to dispel that notion. There are certainly couples where that is the choice based on their specific diagnosis. But half of all the treatments we do at Shady Grove would be considered low-tech, less expensive, and, you know, from a complexity point of view, pretty straightforward.
Mm, right. It's not too traumatic to go through IUI.
Right.
Let's move on to IVF. And Dr. Boyle, tell us just briefly what it's used for and how it is for a couple of
years. So IVF is used for a variety of different infertility problems. You know, the one that I see most often is low sperm count. So when we have a couple where the female factor evaluation is normal, they've seen Dr. Doyle, everything checks out, they've been doing timed intercourse, that's not working, and maybe they have tried a couple cycles of IUI and they're not successful with that, or their semen analysis numbers are so low that they may not be a great candidate for intrauterine insemination, then we, you know, might suggest trying in vitro fertilization with or without the technology of ICSI, where they take the individual sperm and inject it into the egg. Most commonly when there's an underlying male factor, so if you're working on low semen parameters, so low sperm count, poor motility, or in our severe male factor patients where they're not having any sperm appear in their ejaculate and we're surgically going and getting sperm, then they'll always use ICSI, where we inject the sperm into the egg. So, you know, IVF obviously revolutionized what we can offer patients that have infertility. And then ICSI, furthermore, has just been, you know, such an amazing resource for couples that have severe male factor.
Mm. Well, we're going to open the phone lines. And don't forget to call us, 855-400-HEALTHY. And while you call us, let's take a look at this video from Shady Grove Fertility, where Dr. Doyle works.
What does hope look like?
What does hope look like? Hope looks like our patients. Hope also looks like our staff. You know, just doing everything that you can to have the ultimate goal, and that's just to have a family. have a child to love. Hope is courageous. Hope is perseverance.
Looks like the patient trusting us. That's what hope is all about. I think the patient feeling that they're at the best place that they can be.
It's resolution of what's going on at a particular time of their life, or potentially helping them move to next steps that they didn't think would be necessarily options for them.
Hope is spiritual.
I love what we do. I love that we help people achieve dreams that they never thought they would ever be able to achieve.
Yeah, they definitely gave me hope.
We're changing people's lives every single day.
Hello?
Lonnie?
Yeah.
Hi, it's Allison.
And Melissa.
Hey! You're pregnant.
You're pregnant, and
that's awesome.
I can hear the nurses and the doctor in the background cheering.
Going in and seeing the first scan is always exciting. See the patient's reactions, particularly if they've been trying very long. You hear that? That's your baby's heartbeat.
I feel like kids really give you a reason to live and continue, and I can't imagine life without them.
My late dad always used to say that you'll never understand or comprehend the extent of one's love until you have children.
I knew the love that a child, you know, brought to my life, and I wanted him to have a brother or a sister.
Finally had the first child. I mean, that's it. Changes your life.
Children really do change life for the better, don't they? Now, you both mentioned a little bit about lifestyle factors. What lifestyle factors do you encourage your male patients to make?
And we're probably going to echo similar things, but one, be fit. So we want you to exercise. We want men to keep their weight down because that can affect their hormone. It can affect their sperm production. You want to minimize any bad habits like drinking, obviously minimize that, no drug use, and stop smoking. Because one of the things that we know more than anything is that tobacco use can definitely affect sperm motility, as well as sexual function. So keep your weight down, don't smoke, try to limit caffeine, just live a healthy life, and that will help you.
Mm. Excellent advice. For women, what do you, I know you mentioned about the relationship between obesity and not ovulating.
Right. So, you know, specifically about obesity, there's certainly a good amount of data that shows that treatments are just less successful with patients with higher BMIs, and it also translates into a longer time to conception, lower pregnancy rates, and higher rates of miscarriage too. So having that normal BMI is really important, keeping that weight down.
Yeah, we can't say that too many times.
No. Right, right.
No.
And then many of the other things for the same things that apply to a male are absolutely apply to the female too. So, you know, absolutely stop smoking. That's the number one most important thing you can do. Limiting your alcohol, generally less than 2 drinks a day would be an important kind of cutoff. Mm. But,
For women, that's still quite a lot, 2 drinks
right.
a day.
So even just saying, if you're trying to get pregnant, maybe now is time to take a break.
Because there's no safe limit in pregnancy, so why not stop now?
Right. And there's always that possibility that you could be pregnant each month. So,
exactly.
And way before you're going to recognize that, it's always best to not be having any alcohol on board. And then, you know, limiting caffeine intake is absolutely important too. You know, I think it's reasonable to have a cup or two of coffee today, but we often have to specify that when we talk about a cup of coffee, it's not quite the grande one. It's the, an 8-ounce cup of coffee is what we're looking at. So those are important. Those are important things to limit as well.
Right. Now, what about prevention of infertility?
I was going to comment on the female. I mean, age for the female.
Right.
I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, even when I see my patients, from a male factor, you know, it's much more forgiving. Fertility is much more forgiving regarding to age with men. But I think the number one thing that you could say is really age with the female partner.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the number one thing.
Mm. Absolutely.
I mean, that has to be the number one thing.
We've cut that data a million different ways, and we've looked at every possible thing that could be associated with a lower rate of conceiving. Age trumps every single time. And, you know, we don't ever want people to feel like that is, like, scary to them.
Right.
I mean, even if you're 35 or even if you're 40, you know, the most important thing is just the knowledge and taking that knowledge and making that next step that's appropriate for you.
Right.
And you want to make the most of what you have. And so the first step is just knowing where you are.
But I think the age of pregnancy, the age that couples are planning a pregnancy is getting later and later.
I mean, I think, I know you see, couples are naive, you know, they are getting involved and married later, they're putting off having children, and they're naive to the impact age has.
Right.
And, you know, innocently naive, you know, innocently. They just don't realize that, well, I really shouldn't wait till I'm 42 to try.
Right.
You know, the male side is different, you know, I mean, men make sperm really into their 60s and 70s, often in normal numbers, and then only in the 70s and 80s do things decline. But,
right.
You know, so we have an ease there. But for women, I mean, it's education, I think, more than anything.
And like you're saying, you know, you get sperm production through most of a man's life.
Right.
But in the egg cohort that you have in a female, the group that she's born with, that's the group that she has for the rest of her life.
That's right.
And you're just pulling out of that group.
Men make new sperm every 3 to 4 months.
Yes. So, whereas for women, we've got it at birth. And
that's it.
In fact, they're decaying before we're even born. And when we run out, that's menopause.
Right.
So, yeah. And the other thing you mentioned was about infection. And I think if you've got pelvic infection, get it treated fast.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Save your tubes if you possibly can. Do everything. Yeah. Thank you so much. We've run out of time. It's been wonderful
having you.
Thank you for having us.
If you're facing the challenge of infertility, be sure to seek help. As you plan, be sure that both of you keep your weight down, eat a healthy diet, supplement with folic acid, ladies, have a good exercise program, stop smoking, alcohol, caffeine, beware of environmental toxins, explore your treatment options, and find which solution is right for you. Children are a wonderful gift that will fill your life with love and joy. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. We'll see you next time.